objection to appointing Senator Beck as deputy mayor. He has a one-year term left, but I'd appreciate if he has been finished out as deputy mayor. Any objection? Hearing none, Senator Beck is appointed deputy mayor. Congratulations. Let's take a report from the city, City of Wasilla. I saw Mayor Cottle here, and then we'll City of Palmer.
Mayor Halter, Assembly Members, Bert Cottle, Mayor of City of Wasilla. I think everybody got the letter I sent earlier today. This is in reference what I referred to at the last meeting as the Culver bill, and what I thought could be some remedies to fix what happened back in 2013, and which has affected us for the last 5 years, and has been a decrease in the funding that has went to the City of Wasilla by $310,000. And I spoke to Mayor Thompson today. They've lost, or $80,000 has been reappropriated. I won't use the word lost. From when it went from $15 reimbursement per license plates in your jurisdiction down to $7. So in listening to the meeting 2 weeks ago, there seems to be enough money in that $6 million even after the transfer, if there's a transfer made, to possibly pay back the cities and go back to the way it was before the, what I refer to as the Culver bill. So I know that's coming up later in your meeting, and I know you will consider that and all the options with it. Also this Sunday, the main post office in Wasilla, as well as a carrier annex on the Palmer-Wasilla Highway, will be open from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. for pickup. Also, Maddie is having her last local yokel bazaar Saturday and Sunday from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. each day. It's free. Don't forget the Christmas Friendship Dinner is next Tuesday. That's also free. And last year we fed just over 3,500 people, and we expect that number again this year or more. And there's still time to be a volunteer. You can go online to figure out how to be a volunteer. The biggest gun show in the valley is coming on the 19th and 20th of January, and that's at the Wasilla High School. There'll be over 150 vendors, and that's a fundraiser for the Wasilla hockey team. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mayor. City of Palmer, Mr. Wallace.
What did I plug anything? Nate Wallace, City Manager, City of Palmer. Thank you, Mayor. I just want to support what Mayor Cottle had to say about the motor vehicle tax. Palmer was, all the cities were affected by the same percentage, 51.3%, based on how it worked out over the last 5 years. For us, it was almost $215,000 in the shift in revenues. So we would appreciate seeing that come back to us. Also of note, about that same time, the grants to the cities for paving and calcium chloride, also known as the dust control program, ended at about that same time. I don't know if it's just a matter of function administratively, but just the different revenues to help with paving and dust control that the city relied on about 2013, we took a big hit overall. So it would be nice to see that money come back and the formula changed so that all roads are treated the same. The formula looks more like 11, 11, 11, as opposed to 15, 7, and 11, where the cities are the lowest on the totem pole. So again, for your consideration, we have that discussion later. On another note for the city, we passed our budget on December 11th, so we're fully funding all our services, the police department, fire department, we share with the borough, the borough funds half that, or we fund half of that. It's a great partnership, but it's fully funded this year. Put aside almost $1.1 million for our capital projects this year, and of that, $500,000 is for paving projects, for matching with federal, state, or anybody else that would help care to participate in finishing the paving of our roads. Additional money for parks and then a new road grader. As we look to inherit more roads with the expansion of the Glen Highway, we'll receive almost 15 lane miles of new roads in the city when that's done. So the council again has had funding this year, and so we've fully funded again our budget, and we look forward to spending some capital money in the valley. Merry Christmas and happy holidays to
Merry Christmas to you too, and to the City of Palmer. I want to the city to know how beautiful it is driving into City of Palmer with all your Christmas lights. It's just amazing. So
we did cut our budget next year by.
And maybe we'll work on the borough building next year too, and get a few Christmas lights in our building. So thank you. Okay, City of Houston. I don't see anybody. So let's go on to the school district. We just had a joint school board assembly meeting last week. Is there a joint assembly school board committee report?
I don't think so.
Deputy Mayor? No? Okay. Any other assembly public relations reports? Okay, let's turn it over to Mr. Moosey.
Good evening, and I apologize. I have quite a few items this evening under manager's comments. First one is, on his way here is our lobbyist, John Harris. We're spending quite a bit of time right now. In fact, here he is walking in the door. I just introduced you. We're spending our time knowing and understanding and start establishing relationships with the new appointees from the governor's office and keeping a close eye on how the House, especially the House and the Senate, are organizing to see opportunities. So just kind of a case in point on how relationship, especially in time when there's not a lot, really kind of works for us. So during the earthquake, nationally, everybody was, I'm appalled and interested in, looks like an atom bomb that kind of went off at Vine Road. It was all over, serious. You know, some folks even took their kids out there and had them climb under giant slabs of pavement to take selfies and that sort of thing. But we looked at that, and because of the relationship that we've had ongoing with some of our staff and DOT staff, in the time that we spent when we met with Senator Murkowski and Senator Sullivan and staff, and we're able to get the state to come in and do Trunk Road, which saved us immediately about $3.5 to $4 million, and everybody's amazed on how quick that worked. And that worked because of the relationship that we had and the contact we made with the new DOT commissioner 2 days before when we met with him and did the tours of Vine Road and Houston Middle School. That was done immediately, and DOT Director John McKinnon gave his staff direction. He says, get the Mat-Su Borough whatever they want, but stay out of their way and don't interfere with what they're doing. So we essentially saw the opportunity and turned it over to them. They used our local contractors to do the work, manage it, and got it done. So that's why Mr. Harris is important. That's why we go to Juneau to establish those relationships. So when we really need it, this kind of stuff happens. So it's good for safety. And I know one meeting ago, I asked for $6 million. That was part of the reason that we needed that money. And that has been relieved from us. So that's why we go. And that's why we need somebody down there constantly at Juneau, even though he doesn't want to be there. Ted wants to be there all the time, but I don't know if Mr. Harris does. So the next thing I have is, and I have spoken, I have said this publicly, that we still haven't received money for the 2012 flood from FEMA. That is accurate to a point. So I want to kind of quickly go over that. This happened in September 2012, and we had 60 roads with multiple locations of damages. You know, some needed immediate work. 27 sites needed further repairs. So essentially what has happened with that is we have received approximately $3.6 million thus far from FEMA. And they are getting, in fact, $3.38 million. We still have a couple projects that are outstanding that is, I won't say are doing, but because of requirements, making sure and their approval, we still have kind of outstanding. So it takes a while, but FEMA is paying us everything they're eligible for. It just takes some time. And there are some things that, you know, for instance, we had a bridge that went out, as an example, and the bridge was substandard. And we want to make it standard. There's going to be an issue with FEMA on, do they replace the substandard bridge, and that's what they'll pay for, when we really, it just doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but those are the rules. So we're getting better. The program that we talked about, that we put the information in, is going to help us much better. And because of the 2012 flood, and because we worked on the 2016 fire, we're getting better than that. So I think if it's eligible, we are going to get our funding from FEMA. But I think I left you with the impression that it takes forever, and FEMA is a reason. They are slow. They have to be due diligence, but we're getting better, and we think we can recoup our money sooner. And sooner being 12 months, 24 months moving forward. Next, I'd like to have Barbara Bumgardner come and kind of give you an overview on finances, where we are, number one, since this is the year of the disaster, first on the cyber incident, and then second, where we are financially on the earthquake. And Barbara is our comptroller for the borough.
I am Barbara Baumgartner, comptroller for the Mat-Su Borough through the mayor. The cyber incident, to date, we have $2.2 million in expenditures, and that is for payroll costs, overtime costs of our staff, and then payments made for services, equipment, software, and then various supplies and whatnot. We have our insurance coverage for that, which is $1 million, and it's my understanding that we are anticipating getting all of that. We don't have the check in hand yet, as far as I know.
We're going to get all the $1
million? That's my understanding.
Very good.
And then there's the legislation for $1 million. That's on, I believe, on the agenda today. Pulling money from reserves. So there's $2 million in funding at this point. We do have money to pay all of the expenses. So it's just a matter of, there is another $200,000 that we have spent that we'll need that covered. And then we have encumbrances of $420,000 of bills possibly to still pay. So that's the cyber attack. Earthquake for the schools so far, we have $212,000 that we've spent. And for the borough infrastructure facilities, we've spent $203,000. And I don't have information on, you know, what they're expecting or what they have encumbered for other projects.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you. Any questions, or Senator Leonard?
Are we self-insured on this infrastructure expenses, or what type of deduction do we have for?
So for our facilities, including ours and the schools, it is a 5%
value.
And if you have a school that's valued at $40 million, that is essentially $2 million you got to pay out of pocket up front. Now, one of the things that we have quite a bit of road damage, and Terry may help us, he has another issue come up, may address that. They don't provide insurance for that. So that's on our own. However, the deductible, the road work, other items, we will turn that into FEMA, and we think we have a very strong likelihood we are going to get reimbursed for that. And it really kind of comes down to understanding what's eligible, providing the proper documentation, that sort of thing. It's a little bit Simon Says, but that's okay. And unfortunately for this process, we've had a lot of practice. Unfortunately, we've had a lot of practice. Thank you, Barbara.
Ms. Bongler, do you know what our yearly premium is for the 25 million?
The premium?
The cost.
Do you know?
For the $25 million that we share with the...
Yeah.
Please do, if we could get that out to the seven members, and we sure appreciate it.
All right.
So next, a lot of questions on FEMA, on what we're doing now with FEMA, that sort of thing, in a process, and also too, for the public, because there is some funding. We have Casey Cook to address those issues.
So Casey Cook, I'm the emergency manager. Excuse me if I'm not quite as eloquent as the mayor of Wasilla, so if I stumble, please forgive me. Mr. Moosey, you're right. The 2012 floods, I think that's kind of what we're looking at. We had the 60 roads. Those were split into project worksheets. We had 10 original project worksheets, and then over the course of the last few years, we've added two, and we're currently in the process of adding another one right now because of that process that you talked about, Mr. Moosey. And by my calculations, you were right again that we have recouped almost all of that money. The latest part of that is the one that we're working on now, and so we'll see that once we do the work and submit for reimbursement for that. So that's kind of coming along there. Was there something more?
Yes, could you please, for us, kind of give us how are private citizens being able to be helped through this emergency process with the state, alaska.gov?
Sure.
And also to limits and what they need to do.
Sure, so the state of Alaska runs the individual assistance program, and it's half of the federal individual assistance program that FEMA runs. And so right now that is around $17,000 and change. It's not meant to make you whole as a homeowner, but it does help alleviate some of those immediate costs and financial burdens that you experience after a disaster. We were out the last few days, all of last week, over the weekend, with the state and FEMA representatives going to individual homes, doing their preliminary damage assessment so that we can make the case, or the state can make the case to FEMA, that it needs to be a federally declared disaster as well, which will then bump up the individual assistance amount that we would be able to get from FEMA. So technically that's about $35,000 that people would be eligible for to pay for driveway cracks, sheetrock damage, those life essential types of things that might have been damaged or destroyed during the earthquake. And so we're continuing to push that. People need to go to the state of Alaska, ready.alaska.gov, and apply for that program to be part of it.
Senator Leonard, did you have a question?
Yes, Casey, and the deadline for that is January 29th or something?
Correct. Yep, so they'll leave that open. I think you can call in 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. And do it on the phone, or you can go online and actually fill it out online. And they will eventually call you back, hypothetically, if it was you. And they'll call you back and ask you a bunch of questions. You can start doing repairs right now. Keep your receipts. If you're getting your home inspected, keep that receipt. And then that can be an eligible item into that state program.
And is this all income-based, or is it just damage-based?
It's damage-based. So you can make no income, or you can make a lot of money, and it doesn't matter. So what they will ask, though, is if you have insurance, and so they'll look to your insurance first. And if you do have earthquake insurance, this will help pay the deductible on your earthquake insurance. That's an eligible expense for that. And so it's not income-based at all.
Senator Sumner?
Through the mayor. So they will reimburse up to, is it 75% of... is that direct reimbursal? I was under the impression that they had effectively subsidized mortgage rates for repairs or for rebuilding.
So we're talking about two different programs. So the individual assistance, that's a grant. It's a flat-out grant, 100%, whether it's from the state or FEMA. On the public assistance side, FEMA will pay 75% of the reimbursement, and then the state of Alaska pays the other 25% of the reimbursement that the borough does. So two different pots of money programs.
Do you have any idea how many homeowners or businesses are insured against earthquake disaster? Private insurance?
Not many.
Not many?
Just because of the fact that it's so expensive. And then the premium deductible after that is about 10% of the value of your home. So even if you had a $10,000 damage in your home, but your deductible is $50,000, it doesn't make a lot of sense to pay $50,000 for $10,000.
Right. So very few, you'd say very few in the Matsu boroughs probably insured against earthquake?
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. Any other questions? Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
I hear there's a shortage in our area of glassware, TVs, and booze. So the next thing we have is emergency communications review, and as you're all aware, there was an issue, and so we have been and we will consistently be reviewing our process for improvement in that area. We were really disappointed that the original public effort really overshadowed the great effort that was made out in the field. But I, you know, I mean, after that first couple days, I think we had a very good recovery. And so, you know, we put out on November 30th, we had 18 posts that we put out on our Facebook page, three posts on our emergency management page, and two posts on the main page. Then we followed up on the next few days of 68 posts on Facebook and 17 on the main. And we've done numerous interviews and that sort of thing. So I think we kept up with it. But one of the things that we learned is no matter what we put out there, and the issue is our citizens really want to hear from you, the public officials. They'll hear from myself, they'll hear from the director, but they really need to hear from the mayor and assembly, the people who are elected. And that's where a lot of criticism came from, because what Anchors was doing and we weren't. And that will be corrected. We will have you involved immediately the next time something like this happened. And I want to tell you, we've really been successful in the past emergencies, and we've had the cyber. But because I think this is so quick and immediate, our focus was on repair, fixing, making sure, and we did not hit the public as quick as we would. But that, I will make sure, and we will make sure, reviewing our processes, that is immediate, and we will do so. So lessons learned, but I'm guaranteeing you, we will be better going forward.
Any comments, Senator Mayfield, or thoughts?
We've talked about this, John, but so is the Assembly going to have any opportunity to weigh in on some of the public information processes that we use going forward?
I will be glad. We're reviewing our policy. I'll be glad to get a copy of our policy to the Assembly that you can review and make comments on or suggestions. Yes.
Anybody else? We probably, I just schedule in press conferences on an emergency flood or fire or anything like that, just having it wired so who's calling it and when and timely. On a Sockeye fire, you know, the fire started at 1:30, and by 10 a.m. the next morning we had our first press conference. And so, I mean, that's just some sort of strategy on how we're going to do that would be my only request. Are you, Senator Sykes?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, and thank you, Mr. Manager. I think that what was mentioned earlier about the fact that the response was going very well, even though that we hadn't held a press conference, was an important point. But I think equally important is the public needs to know it's going well, and that's what got left out. And so I think we have to be a little bit more proactive on the platforms and be a little bit more pushy to get on the airwaves, because you know we are a pretty large community now, and a lot of people work in Anchorage. So I just saw that as a missed opportunity, and to really, you know, have a good strategy for getting out there on the platforms. And also, I know that we have what I guess is called a virtual EOC, Emergency Operations Center, but. I think that we should be able to have all of the members of the press, and we should be able to reach out to the press in an easily identifiable single point. And that's my experience from having been there once upon a time.
Anyone else? Okay, Mr. Boosie, are you finished? You got some more?
Oh, absolutely not, Mayor. I got some more stuff here. So next, we'd like Director Terry Dolan. First, I'd like him to address the landfill use during this emergency. And then also, too, Terry, could you kind of touch on the inspections and how we're handling our public buildings with the inspections and that sort of thing?
Certainly. Terry Dolan, Director of Public Works. First, on the landfill, I provided everyone a copy of initial landfill fee waiver costs, one-pager. You should have it in front of you. Right in the neighborhood of $67,000 and change is what our overall costs are. That includes the cost per ton that we would have pulled in for revenue, plus additional personnel costs for the manpower we had to bring in to execute this. We didn't include any full-time wages because those are sunk costs anyway, but we included on-call temps and any overtime wages in those numbers. And you can see the distribution on that page. About half of the waste came to Central Landfill, and then 28% to Big Lake. Big Lake is always at least twice the size in terms of its volume to the next biggest transfer station. And so you can see the numbers get small very rapidly after that. Then on building inspections.
Tony Leonard.
Terry, and this doesn't have to be tonight, I'd be interested to know like what the average tonnage was last year for, say, the two-week period. I don't know if you have those records from the 29th through the 10th versus what it was this year. So just to see how much more material went into the landfill based on this disaster. It would be an interesting number to see what type of...
We do have those records, and we can get those for you, no problem.
I'd appreciate that.
Senator Sumner?
Through the mayor, do you guys weigh the cans? Or because my impression was that a lot of people were just weighed through the scales, so I'm not really sure.
So folks that were weighed through the scales went and dumped in the cans that were on the wall. You're talking about the Central Landfill.
Yeah.
And then those cans are weighed before they're hauled up to the face to be dumped. So that's how we know the total at Central Landfill. It's a similar process at the transfer stations. The cans are filled, then they're hauled to Central Landfill and weighed and then dumped. Some folks we sent directly to the face of the landfill because they had larger loads, and in those cases we made those folks go across the scale so we had their weight as well. Everything that went to the face was weighed.
Okay. Ms. Mayfield?
Through the mayor to Director Dolan, can you just describe the frequency of dumps? I know that you had sent the mayor and I some communication in regards to kind of daily reports. Can you just inform the rest of the assembly?
Yes, sir. So generally what we saw Wednesday was our first day, and it was a slow day, slower than average day. So the fee waiver didn't appear to have any particular impact. It was obviously winter time, and the weather this week wasn't the greatest either. So those things can drive down the number of visits that we have from residents. But and it was really slow all week. It picked up a little bit late on Friday, and then bigger numbers on Saturday, but then Sunday was the rush. It was the last day. Lots of people showing up all the way throughout the day. We had some problems with handling containers out at Big Lake, which caused us to not have space for all the waste that came there. We had about 40 residents show up with large loads that we asked to take those loads into Central Landfill so that we could keep Big Lake open for folks that only had a few bags. And most of them were able to do that. The few that were unable to do that, we made separate arrangements with them to take their waste at a later time. So I think we executed the assembly's intent in serving all the residents that wanted to take advantage of this opportunity. The other thing I would say about it is you might have seen on social media folks saying Public Works isn't happy about doing this. I'm not sure where they got that from. Absolutely not true. When the assembly makes a decision that we're going to do something like this, we go and execute it the way the assembly wants executed, and we take care of all the residents that want to have that service. So I think at the end of the day, it was good for folks that wanted the service.
Follow up to the Assemblymember Sumner. No, go ahead and do your follow up.
Thank you. I just wanted to say to you, Terry, and your team, thank you very much. And you, as far as I can tell, you brilliantly executed the direction of the assembly. And I just really appreciate it. And I wish you would share my thanks.
I'll do that. I'll tell you right now, Butch Shapiro and his team out of Central Landfill and the folks that run the transfer stations did an absolutely great job. They had a plan in place for about 2 weeks before we actually got the legislation through, because we thought it was coming, and they had a real good plan. They rehearsed it and they executed it well. So one little fumble on Sunday, but we worked through that and got everybody taken care of.
Senator Sumner?
So through the mayor, sorry, would it be accurate to say that this cost us slightly more than twice it would normally cost us to take in this tonnage if it were over time? So I see an additional manpower cost that's more than the revenue. So you would think that revenue would typically be balanced with the cost. So if you've got an additional cost that's more than the revenue, then it would stand to reason that we effectively, it costs us about a little more than twice what it would normally cost to take this tonnage over time, say.
So there are different ways, obviously, to calculate what our costs are. And like I said, I didn't include any of the full-time personnel costs, obviously, that were included in this work. But some of the on-call employees who worked during this period would have worked normally anyway. But that's really hard to judge exactly how much of your on-call. And I included all of the on-call costs because typically FEMA will reimburse us for on-call costs for things that are reimbursables and overtime costs, which is why I included both of those. So did this cost us twice as much as it would normally during the same time period for the same amount of waste? I don't know, that's tough to tell. There's a lot of different ways to do that analysis. My guess is it's probably not entirely twice. There was some additional cost because we had to have an additional manpower to man these facilities, especially Central Landfill and the Big Lake Transfer Site needed additional manpower in order to effectively control the residents as they come in and get them going to the right places and speed them through. So there were additional manpower costs. Whether it was twice, I doubt that really it was twice as much, considering we would have worked some of those on calls anyway.
Senator Sykes.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Through the mayor to Mr. Dolan. I just want to thank you and pass on the appreciation from constituents. Usually I get emails that are identifying a problem or concern or a gripe, but I didn't get a single gripe about this, and I did get a lot of thanks, and so I think there was appreciation out there.
Mr. Beck.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Yeah, I might have missed it, Director Dolan, but could you verify for me, were some of the transfer stations open extra hours that they normally would not have been open? Did you say that and I just didn't hear it?
So no, we stuck with the normal hours for the most part. Now we did hold the Central Landfill open late on Sunday night because we had sent people from Big Lake to Central Landfill and we wanted to keep it open until they got there. So we did keep it open, I think, an extra half hour while we were waiting for additional folks to show up.
Thank you. Thank you.
Anything else? Marvelous job. Tell Mr. Shapiro that too, because I was out there speaking to the day before it started, and he was all into it and going to bypass the scales and
yes, sir.
Efficiency. And
yes, sir. He's probably listening, so he's probably hearing
you. Good for him. Good for you. Thank you.
Yes, sir. So building inspections. Of course, the first thing that happens after the earthquake is employees all over the borough at the 80 or so buildings that are manned take a look at the facility that they're in and go, is it safe to be in here? And they make an initial judgment on that. Obviously, you know, if the windows are all broken and the building's leaning or there's collapses and stuff, folks will make a decision not to go back into the building. So that's sort of the first assessment that happens. Then after the on-site supervisors make a decision that folks can go back into the building, then they do a more thorough inspection. And this is just your normal employees, and they're looking around their facility looking for potential indicators of some sort of structural damage, lots of dust, fallen masonry. We saw a lot of these acoustic tile ceilings come down in places. And where employees saw damage that they had concern about, the next thing we did was have our tradesmen, folks that are on our maintenance staff, or other folks like our safety officer here in the borough who's trained on post-disaster building assessments, go and look at those things that our employees saw that gave them concern. And in cases where those trained employees saw problems that concerned them, then we brought in professional engineers to look at those problems and tell us whether or not the facilities were safe. And that's sort of the progression. If we needed to, we could certainly purchase engineering services to inspect all of our buildings. But when there's no indication of any kind of structural damage in the facility, you know, you might consider it to be a waste of money to have a full engineering inspection when there's no reason, apparent reason, to do that. Then about, I guess it was on Friday last week, our insurance company folks thought they could do many of the buildings that the borough manages. Like I said, about 80 of them or so. We gave them our high priority buildings, mostly based on the population density of employees at the buildings and the population density of the residents who use those facilities and the proximity to the epicenter. And that insurance company team, or two teams now, is looking at those buildings sequentially, sort of by area. And they did, I think it was right around 12 or 14 buildings yesterday. They did an additional 14 buildings today. As far as I know, they have not found any kind of major structural problems. They told me specifically this morning that yesterday they did not find any. I haven't seen their full report from today, but I know they looked at another 14 buildings, and if they found any major problems, they would have told us. But we'll get the details of that from them tomorrow morning. And they're continuing those inspections. I think they're headed out towards Big Lake tomorrow. So they're trying to do them by area. And so that's going well. It gives you another level of professional inspection on top of just our employees or our tradesmen looking at these buildings. So I think everything that had significant cosmetic damage is going to be looked at by this insurance team.
Thank you very much. And this building here, how many employees were in this building on that morning?
I think it's in the area of 200.
What was it? Was this building moving and shaking? And
it absolutely was. It had significant cosmetic damage.
Nothing structural.
We did not find anything to indicate structural damage anywhere in the building. You wouldn't probably expect it in the old school portion of the building, built in 1939, I think, and survived the 64 quake. Some of the building standards in those days, the size of the timbers and things like that, really pretty sturdy buildings that they were making. We were potentially worried about the new part of the building, the part that we're in here, but the teams did not find any kind of indications that they had structural damage. And there's a seam between those two buildings so that they can move separately. The gym is also a separate building. We did find a little bit of damage in the seam between the old school and the gym, but nothing significant that would give us worry about the structural integrity of the building.
Who gives the evacuation order for this building if need?
In the case of an earthquake, it's self-evident, I think.
Run for your life.
Right.
Not as orderly as schools.
But so the borough does have a program, and we have employees who are pre-appointed to positions and are trained to manage evacuations and then accounting for personnel afterwards. And those processes are reflected in other locations as well.
Okay, anything else for Mr. Dolan? Thank you very much. Great report. Mr. Moosey?
Nothing more.
Okay, Mr. Sproplis, what's going on in the legal world?
Our evacuation plan is to just run out screaming. So.
That's what I heard.
Nothing specific to report, Mr. Mayor. A lot of reading, a lot of writing going on in our office. We are assisting, you know, in the insurance end of things right now. We've met a couple times with some of those folks, reviewed the coverages, stuff like that. I don't think our services are going to be needed in this. It sounds like it's all going pretty smooth. So that's all.
Any questions for the attorney? Great memo that you provided us, legal memo on that. That was thorough and to the point. Appreciate that. Okay. Madam Clerk.
The upcoming meeting schedule is in your red folder in the clerk's report. So after this meeting, our next meeting will be January 3rd. It begins at 10 a.m. with the state delegation. So we've got a little bit of a break in there. And then I will be out of the office January 15th through the 25th, and Jess Kilborn will be acting clerk at that time.
And the meeting with the legislative delegation is over in the LIO building?
It is over in the LIO building, Mr. Mayor.
We got a breakfast ahead of time?
Yep, at 9:30.
Okay. Thank you. Are there any comments on the citizen and other correspondence? Agenda item F. Hearing none, they are presented. Madam Clerk, would you please read the IMs into the record?
IM 18176, reporting the conclusion of contract for bid number 18118B to Triple V Contracting LLC for the fireweed restroom remodel. IM 18180, reporting the conclusion of contract for bid number 15142B to Wertman Commercial LLC for heating, ventilation, and air conditioning upgrades for 8 schools, project number 40199.
Are there any comments on the IMs? Hearing none, the IM is presented. There are no persons to be heard. Our first public hearing, Madam Clerk, ordinance 18-105 and resolution 18-073.
An ordinance amending MSB 5.251.45 to annex property located on Kearney Road, Ellen Street and Sleepy Hollow Circle into the West Lakes Fire Service Area number 136 with the accompanying resolution 18-73. A resolution finding the annexation of properties on the Kearney Road, Ellen Street and Sleepy Hollow Circle into the West Lakes Fire Service Area number 136 serves the public interest without the placement of the question on the ballot.
Thank you. I'll open the public hearing. Do we have a sign-up list? The clerk says no. Anybody in the audience wish to speak on ordinance 18-105 and resolution 18-073? Seeing and hearing none, I will close the public hearing. Assemblymember Sumner, would you please move it for us?
I move to adopt ordinance 18-105 and resolution 18-073.
Any discussion? Did we get Assemblymember McKee? Is he attending? Okay. So we have one that's absent, Assemblymember. Any objection to passing ordinance 18-105 and resolution 18-073? Seeing and hearing none, legislation passes. Madam Clerk, 18-106 and resolution 18-074.
An ordinance accepting and appropriating $100,000 from the Mount Sioux Trail and Park Foundation to Fund 440, project number 15040, to develop the Settlers Bay Coastal Park MSB 007387 with accompanying resolution 1874. A resolution approving the scope of work and budget for Settlers Bay Coastal Park Fund 440, project 15040 for park development.
Thank you. Do we have I'll open the public hearing. Do we have a sign-up list? The clerk is shaking her head in the back of the room. Anybody in the audience wish to speak to this legislation? Seeing and hearing none, we'll close the public hearing at this time. Senator Mayfield, could you move this for us?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move to adopt ordinance 18-016 and resolution 18-074.
You want to speak to it?
I would actually like to go ahead and propose an amendment at this time, if I may. And this amendment was in your packet. It was just recently revised today, so it may be a separate sheet in your packet. And I'd ask Madam Clerk to go ahead and read that into the record, if she would, please.
Madam Clerk.
This is to amend the resolution. Strike the fifth whereas clause and replace it with the following. Whereas the grant requires the borough to provide a match of $100,000. This match will be provided by both the Great Land Trust and the borough. And insert a sixth whereas clause to read, whereas the Great Land Trust will provide a cash match of $50,000 through direct purchase of goods and services for the project. Insert a seventh whereas clause to read, whereas the borough will provide $50,000 of in-kind match by the Land and Resource Management Division and Borough Recreation Services Division 2019 operating budget for staff time working on the project and use of existing recreation services equipment such as Bobcat ATVs, mini excavator, and insert an eighth whereas to read, whereas the Assembly must approve a scope of work and budget prior to funds being expended and amend the budget by inserting the following. Great Land Trust cash match $50,000. Fiscal year 2019 Land and Resource Management Division and Recreation Services Division operating budgets in kind match $50,000. Also area-wide salaries and benefits total of $200,000, and replace the fiscal note with what was attached in your packet.
Okay, everybody have copies of that? Go ahead, Mr. Mayfield.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Mayor. So the ordinance basically goes ahead and accepts and appropriate the $100,000 to the Mat Sioux Trail and Park Foundation. The amendments to the resolution are simply to clarify the finance part of this to include the cash match from Great Land Trust and the in-kind match from the borough of $50,000. So the total budget is set aside in the resolution as being $200,000 rather than $100,000 as originally indicated. This park was the coastal park was accepted last year. If you haven't hiked it, it is a gorgeous piece of property, centrally located just beside the Settlers Bay Golf Course, and it does have a trail plan And this will see that a portion of that vision of that trail plan will come to fruition. So I ask that the Assembly go ahead and approve it. Thank you.
Okay, Senator Sykes, gonna.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Just for clarification, maybe the manager or Senator Mayfield can answer it. So you're saying that the fiscal note remains the same. It's just the language that describes the grant that changes it.
Yeah, the resolution has to set aside the scope of finances. So originally it just had accept the money from the Parks Foundation, but in fact Greatland Trust is giving a $50,000 cash donation, and the borough is giving some in-kind match. So we're simply restating the fact that it's. That those additions are there.
Thank you. This amendment basically came through staff, is my understanding, correct? Okay. So, Mr. Sumner?
Through the mayor to the manager, sorry, I might have missed that. Is this where it says area-wide salaries and benefits, that's just for the Recreation Services Division that's to pay for the staff time, or?
That is correct. This is coming our community development. There is not any other department involved in this match. Is that correct? Yes, that's correct.
And Mr. Phillips, who is the director, is nodding. He said yes. Okay. Okay, any other discussion? Any objection to passage of the amendment as proposed by Mr. Mayfield in writing? See no objection, so the amendment passes. Any objection to the legislation as amended passing? See no objection, legislation passes. Madam Clerk, 18107 and resolution 18075.
An ordinance accepting and appropriating fiscal year 2019 community assistance program funds in the amount of $284,202 to fund 475 project number 47033. With accompanying resolution 1875, a resolution approving the scope of work and budget for the fiscal year 2019 community assistance program, project number 47033.
Thank you. I will open a public hearing at this time. Is there a sign up list? Madam Clerk in the back is shaking her head. Anybody in the audience wish to speak to this community assistance program legislation? Seeing none, I'll close the public hearing. Assemblymember Beck, could you?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move to adopt ordinance 18-107 and resolution 18-075.
Any discussion? Any objection to passing of ordinance 18107 and 18075? Seeing none, legislation passes, and I'd encourage all assembly members to thank our legislative delegation for this pass through money. It goes to the community councils in a certain amount, and it's I know it's highly appreciated by them, so please do that if you get a chance. Madam Clerk, ordinance 18109.
An ordinance adopting the City of Houston Local Hazard Mitigation Plan and amending MSB 1524030B34 Comprehensive Plan.
I will open a public hearing at this time. Any sign up? No sign ups. Anybody in the audience wish to speak to ordinance 18109? City of Houston Local Hazard Mitigation Plan. Seeing no one, I will close the public hearing at this time. Senator Bovee, this is yours.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move to adopt ordinance 18-109.
Any discussion? Senator Sykes.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I have a couple of clarifications that maybe the manager or staff. The plan at one point says that they designate a planning team, and there will be a member of the borough on that planning team. I just wondered if that was designated, any particular person?
To my knowledge, that person position has not been selected. We've not been informed of that, to my knowledge. I will confirm that, and I'm looking for Alex. He's supposed to be here a little bit later, so.
Okay.
Okay. He's probably getting ready for the unfinished business portion of this meeting.
Okay. Well, my other question is that I don't know if we have any knowing way of knowing, but this was obviously written before the earthquake. I just wonder if there is any are any changes being contemplated after the earthquake as we consider the hazard management plan before us?
I am not aware of any revisions being considered at this point in time.
Okay, thank you.
Anyone else? Any? Okay. Any objection to passing ordinance 18-109? Seeing none, we'll pass 18-109 at this time. No objection. Legislation passes. I think this would probably be a good time to take a 3-4 minute break, and we'll go into audience participation and then the consent agenda and then unfinished business. So we'll go off record. It looks like 6:50. And we have a sign up list, so we'll start with that and then we'll call anybody else that wants to speak. So Mike Shields to start with.
My name is Mike Shields, and I'm the primary supervisor for Road Service Area 26, that's the Greater Butte, also the secretary for the Big Road Board of all 16 RSAs. What I'd like to speak to is the, actually it's Ordinance 18-108 that you're looking at, and has to do with the Dust Control Reserve account, which I realize everybody's all got their eye on. I'm not surprised, so do we. One of the things I would like to have you keep in mind as you make decisions on this, what to do with that $6+ million. This fund was originally established to basically jumpstart our ability to get ahead of not only dust control, but protecting road investment. When we reconstruct gravel roads and we do not put some kind of a hard surface on them, we can almost guarantee that within 10 or 15 years, we're going to spend the same amount of money reconstructing that same road again. Paving, whether it's wrap or hard asphalt, we prefer hard asphalt, is a way to make that investment once and then keep it for 25 or 30 years. I would like to see us continue that. So please don't wipe our fund completely out. Having discussed this with some members of the big board, our meeting isn't until Thursday of this week. We would respectfully request a final decision on what to do with all the money that may be sitting in there. If that could be postponed until January, which would give the big board a chance to come back to you with their input in a formal resolution, we would appreciate that. That's really all I've got to say. Keep us in mind, it's still got our title on it.
Thank you. Andy Anderson.
How are we doing today? Andy Anderson. Here, I'm the president of the Sutton Racing Lions. I'm actually really stoked to be here tonight. I think we finally come full circle on the racetrack regulations we've been putting on the table for 5 years. Me, Jim Sykes, our communities, all the racing organizations have got together and made the ultimate compromise, and it's all on paper, and that's why you're not seeing 100 people on my side or the opposing side here tonight. I want to applaud all you guys and us for finally getting all that done. There is some very minute changes that I think we need to fine tune here, but you're not going to find any oppositions with them. And so I'm super stoked on where that's all presented. Some of the small things that you'll see on tonight that Jim Sykes is going to present and why is that at 9 a.m. start time, we're just asking for an hour earlier because, you know, we'll get there. We'll start by the time people need to warm their bikes up and get to the starting gate. So if we actually start at 10, we can't actually launch bikes until 11. So that's starting a little bit pretty late in the day. So we're asking that we can actually have bikes out in the pits starting at 9. So we're asking for 1 hour earlier on that. The race days currently, you know, we just kind of threw out that they want a rest day. Well, we've all decided that rather than a rest day for just operating in a shorter window, and a 4-hour window would be better than having a full rest day here or not, because everybody's race organizations are different, from snow machines to dirt bikes and everything, and So that was an awesome compromise. Instead of us being open 10 a.m. to 10 p.m., be able to make noise all day, we went to a short window, and we can do this any day. So I think that was an awesome win for both sides. The other one was 9 p.m. on the times to shut down during the weekdays. We just addressed that. Let me just look here real quick. I guess that's it. I guess you'll see Jim Sykes' amendment as it comes in here, the last final one. And I went in there to say, hey, this, and he already had it wrote down, and that was from the Sutton Community Council that he got that presented. So I think we fully won with his amendment that he's going to present tonight, and pretty stoked about it. On another note, my son, you'll see in the front page of the Frontiersman, just won the Olympics in Florida, is now one of four factory Yamaha riders in the country, and I'm super stoked. He trains in Sutton, Alaska, goes to Sutton Elementary School. He's a humble straight-A student, and that's all presented and possible because of our amendment changes and the allowing of personal and private racetracks to train and operate that we've drafted and changed over the last 5 years. So appreciate you guys on that. You're allowing us to do what we do and love, and just want to let you know. Thank you.
That's a great photo in the Frontiersman of your son.
Thank you.
Oh, that thing, Madam Clerk, that's a little loud, isn't it? Dane Ferguson.
Hello, I'm Dane Ferguson, president of the Alaska State Snowcross Lions Club. What Andy said, I think that we've come to a great compromise. And I know that Andy's done a lot of work with you guys before I ever got involved. But this does lean a little bit towards what works for motocross and what works for Sutton. I have a lot of things I'd like to bring up, but the only one that I think is relevant that I think we can compromise on for everybody, because it looks like we might be planning on going to 7 days a week, so that takes out a safety issue with the Friday break day, really is we can't push snow machines around to get things organized in the morning before the noise is allowed to start. Pretty much everywhere else, 8 o'clock, that's when guys are starting to test, tune, make changes for the day's temperatures and all the stuff that racers do. But most importantly, we can't even get our snow machines out of our trailers and start getting in position for racing. And not every track is like Andy's where the parking is even close. So, we might be coming from down another parking lot over to get to the venue. So, but we agreed on 9 a.m. And so I'm requesting 9 a.m. because we have to get organized. The sun comes up at around 10 o'clock and we don't have all day sun like Andy. So we can't go till really late at night, with the exception of one event a year. The kids like it when we rent light plants, but that's pretty expensive. We don't want to do that every day. So if we can't get organized in the morning, if we're creating a violation by doing that stuff, it doesn't really work for us. We don't want to create violations. So to keep everything short, we appreciate everything that you guys have done so far. Andy told me not to fill the room up with a bunch of loud kids and make things go late. And so thank you guys for everything.
We thank you too. Yeah. Senator Mayfield.
Yeah, through the mayor, I do have a question. So you're with Motor Mushers?
Alaska State Snowcross Lions Club.
Okay. So are you guys running on land tracks, or are you running on water tracks?
We run on land.
Land, okay.
90%+ of the time.
All right. Thanks. That's just a clarification of one thing.
Okay. Thank you. Is it Brody Smith?
Brody Smith, I'm the vice president out at Valley Rally Raceway. As somebody that does a lot of the operations out there at the racetrack, it helps, as you know, stated before, that the everything goes a lot smoother if we can get prepared and get ready. It also helps us end earlier in the day, and especially since we're racing on Sundays, it helps parents get their kids home and start to get them ready for the next day. So it helps, it doesn't become a burden on their daily lives. The 9 a.m. start time is definitely something that to be considered. We've come to a great compromise, and I will say that everybody here has done a lot of work, and we've been back and forth, and I think that what we've got going on and with the 9 a.m. Start time that we should be able to be like about perfect along everybody's agendas. But thank you.
Okay, thank you. Brian Endel on air quality.
You miss me?
We did. Merry Christmas.
Brian Endel, thank you, Mr. Mayor, Mr. Manager, members of the Assembly and staff. I want to talk about air quality, and specifically, I want to talk about the letter that Assembly Member Sykes wrote in the Frontiersman, which avoided a lot of the important facts that we already have presented in this Assembly. Fact number one, the borough has produced no evidence in their report or in any other way that we need, that we have a problem with air quality or the necessity to fight it. So there's no evidence. The borough has no requirement from the state to monitor air quality. They have the ability to do so, but not the requirement. The planning department has already mentioned this. No penalty has been demonstrated for engaging or for getting rid of this MOU. No penalty. No federal transportation funds. The manager was asked last time, and none of you could provide it either. The Division of Air Quality, oh, this is quoted from the DEC's website. on the quality control plan, page 13, second paragraph. The Division of Air Quality does not have the statutory authority to issue administrative penalties for violations of the Alaska environmental law. This means that the ADEC staff cannot simply write tickets to individuals that are found to be violating the opacity limits. You guys need to do that. So if you take this up, you take the ability to do that and the authority. fact number five, the EPA has been caught in a lie regarding air quality and their foundational reasoning to regulate it. I've provided lots of evidence of this. Junk science, 2017-04, the EPA lied, nobody died. The words in your article are put together like taking a number of truths. The sky is blue, evergreen trees are green, and water is in the ocean. You throw it up in the air, whoops, lands in a blender and you hit spin. And you throw them on a piece of paper. They divert the reader away from the facts that were just listed to work to create fear in borough residents of a big EPA that will overtake us if we don't submit to them. Eve also came up with such deceptive words, came against such deceptive words. God said the serpent was more deceptive, crafty, than any beast of the field. And goes on to say that Eve was deceived by those words. This kind of writing and your decisions, to pursue the MOU are uncalled for in this assembly, which was established by God for the proper judgment and justice of the people of this borough. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. That's all that's on our sign-up list. Anybody else wish to speak on audience participation? Mr. Harris, we'll give you 35 minutes if you'd like. Okay. Well, thank you for helping us with our Juno work. We appreciate it. Okay, let's close audience participation at this time. If seeing none, we will close it. Madam Clerk, consent agenda.
Mr. Mayor. Yes, sir. I'd like to remove two items from the consent agenda. Item.
You had your chance earlier.
Well, we always get a second shot when we get to the agenda item. I haven't forgotten that.
Okay, go ahead.
Action item, action memorandum 18-100, I'd like to pull that one. And action memorandum 18-103.
Okay, Madam Clerk, everything except 100 and 103.
AM 18-101, awarded bid number 19032B to Bogard Road Extension East, Phase 3 to North Star Excavation and Asphalt Incorporated for a contract amount of $450,890.92. AM 18-102, to vacate the 30-foot wide right-of-way of West Eros Road adjacent to the southern boundary of Lot 4, Block 1, Big Lake Estates, plat number 7036, less than west 30 feet, and vacate the 10-foot utility easements within Lot 4, Block 1, Big Lake Estates, plat number 7036, located in Section 32, Township 17 North, Range 3 West, Seward Meridian. 8 a.m. 18-104, authorization to purchase Motorola APX 4000 series handheld radios and related accessories from Motorola Solutions through Procom Alaska for $251,493.21 for Central Mount Sioux Fire Service Area and Willow Fire Service Area.
Mr. Mayor, I incorrectly gave you the number. I meant to pull 104, not 103.
Okay, Madam
Clerk. I will read 103 into the record, and we won't move 104. We can state that for the record, Mr. Mayor.
So go ahead, please.
AM 18103, destruction of ballots from the October 2nd, 2018 regular borough election.
Assemblymember Beck, could you move the what was read?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move to approve the consent agenda as read into the record by the clerk. And do you need me to make that correction verbally, Madam Clerk? Okay, thank you.
Okay, any objection to the consent agenda as read? Seeing and hearing none, that part of the consent agenda is approved. Madam Clerk, 18-100.
Approval of the Road Service Area Maintenance and Improvements List, Summer 2019.
Senator Sykes, please move it to start with.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'd like to move Action Memorandum 18-100 and speak to it.
Okay, 1 minute, please.
I'll be real easy. I just have a clarification on the list of roads. Item number 7 contains 4 roads that I don't know if are in a road service area. I thought they were in the city limits of Wasilla, and if that's considered a road service area, I'd just like to know that. And I did note that there was nothing on this list from Alpine, North Lakes, Lazy Mountain, or Butte. So I'd like to have that clarification about how the road service area works and the 4 roads in item 7 on the list.
Mr. Dolan, I guess.
Terry Dolan, Director of Public Works. So for the outlying road service areas, if they do not have sufficient funding where there's money left over after their operating budget, after their routine plowing, pothole filling, and grading, then they don't typically have capital projects. So that's not uncommon. I think Talkeetna operates at something like a $75 surplus. And so it would take, 100 years before we had sufficient revenue there to do a capital project. That's pretty common in outlying parts of the borough. So that's the second question. The first question was specifically about 4 roads, whether they were in city of Wasilla or outside the city. So we do not have road service area authority inside any of our cities. And so we can't spend road service area monies inside those cities. So these roads that are on the list, I would say without looking them up, I would say it's likely that portions of the road are inside of a city and other portions of the same road are outside the city. But our RSA spending would be limited to the portions outside of the city.
Thank you, Mr. Dolan. Well, that's why I asked for the clarification, because they're just really, I don't know exactly where the city limits are, but these are just out there by the gas stations as the Palmer-Wasilla Highway starts, and you go just past the lake where the, gas station is, or 2 gas stations now on the right before you get to the bowling alley, a couple streets back there. And I thought that those were still in the city limits of Wasilla, but I wasn't sure.
We would not put them on our project list if they were inside the city. If you'd like, I can research that tomorrow and shoot you an email with some more detail on exactly what segment we're talking about on those.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Dolan. Does that help you with 18-100?
Yeah, I'm okay.
Okay, so members, any objection to passing 18-100? Seeing and hearing none, 18-100 passes. Madam Clerk, is it 18-104?
Yes. Authorization to purchase Motorola APX 4000 series handheld radios and related accessories from Motorola Solutions through Procom Alaska for $251,493.21 for Central Mount Sioux Fire Service Area and Willow Fire Service Area.
Senator Sykes, could you move that?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move Action Memorandum 18-104, authorization to purchase Motorola APX 4000 series hand units. I'd like to speak to it.
Yes, please.
Again, just a clarification on this. I did actually try to call the director to figure this out, but I didn't reach him in time. But as I understand it, this purchase, which looks like a really good deal, and just about any way you cut it, is mainly applies to just 2 service areas. So I guess I would like to know, in the informational memorandum, it states that it makes It builds more consistency borough-wide and with other municipalities that surround us. However, if only two fire service areas are getting the handheld, what is the status of the other service areas? Do they already have them, or are they going to get them?
Good evening, Mayor, Assembly Members, Otto Feather, Director of Emergency Services. Through the Mayor, to Mr. Sykes, yes. So these are dual-use radios, so they're reverse compatible as well. And as we go forward, as opposed to buying legacy systems, when fire service areas are purchasing their new radios, they want to make sure they're ready for the next stage. We're going to go to a different set of frequencies that will allow us to work in environments cut through walls. It's just greater reliability. So we don't want to do a wholesale change of all of our radios, and we know we're going to have a number of legacy radios for some time. So as we purchase new radios, we're just going with this system. It doesn't keep us from being able to continue to communicate the way we do now. But with the different fire service area budgets and the timing for when they spend their dollars on communication systems, this is just where they are in their cycle as they do their purchase.
Thank you for the clarification. And Mr. Mayor, I don't have any objection to this at all.
Thank you. So, see no further objection to 18-104. Any other objection from any other assembly member? See it none, 18-104 passes. We're going to unfinished business, and I'm going to turn ordinance 18-021 to the clerk. And she's, because we have a secondary amendment coming in, so she'll take over the procedure.
Mr. Mayor, I'm going to read it into the record real quick. An ordinance amending MSB 1763 racetrack regulations by amending the applicability and making the standards more consistent with other permits within the borough. And Mr. Mayor, there is a pending amendment in your packet that Assemblymember Sykes brought forward. And if Assemblymember Sykes would like, I can go ahead and read the secondary amendment to what is in your packet. It will match what's here, but for the record, I need to say what the changes are.
Go ahead, please.
So under D, 2, after the word borough and before the word prior, we're going to add the words 30-day. And on the second line, get rid of the word 3. Under D3, second line, delete the words more than, and that would be the secondary amendment, Mr. Mayor.
Okay, thank you. Okay, the main motion is passed, so the only thing for you is the amendment.
Secondary amendment.
Is there any discussion on the secondary amendment? Any objection to the secondary amendment? Seeing none, secondary amendment passes. Now to the main.
To the primary.
Any discussion? Assemblyman Sumner. Well, let's let Assemblyman Sykes go first and we'll come down to you.
Excuse me. Is now the appropriate time to do the secondary amendment?
Madam Clerk.
Or do you want to finish the primary?
We will need to finish the primary amendment, and that will be a different amendment to itself.
Okay, thank you.
Assemblyman Sumner? Okay. So any objection to the primary amendment? See it none, it passes. Madam Clerk, where are we at now?
This is another motion to amend Ordinance 18-021, which was previously adopted under Section 7. Amendment of MSB 1763-020-I8 is hereby amended to read as follows. Racetrack operations are permitted 7 days a week, with weekday hours being 11 a.m. to 9 p.m. weekend days and 9 a.m. to 10 p.m. on weekends, except for conditional use permits being approved by the Planning Commission. The Commission may vary the hours and days of operations.
So in that text, you might have 10 a.m. Just cross that out. It should be 9 a.m.
It should be 9, yeah.
The text that I typed up, I made a typo, and I wrote 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. on weekends. It should read 9 a.m. to 10 p.m. on weekends.
And that's what some of our audience participants
that's what they were testifying in favor of, yes.
Okay. So we got the amendment before us. Any discussion? Any objection to passing the amendment that's just read by the clerk? Seeing none, it passes.
And that is it.
And that is it. So we've passed your, and thanks for doing all the work and helping with getting this through.
Thank you.
And tell your son Merry Christmas. He's doing a great job. Okay.
Ordinance 18094.
Okay, yes, you're right. 18094, Madam Clerk.
An ordinance reappropriating $500,000 from the Major Repair and Renovation Reserve Fund 100 and $500,000 from the Capital Expenditures Reserve Fund 100 to the Emergency Response Reserve Fund 100 for the borough's portion of costs associated with the 2018 cyber incident.
Okay, the main motion is on the floor. Any discussion? Sumner, Sumner?
Through the mayor to the manager. I just wanted to make sure that our recent earthquake hasn't changed your priorities on this at all.
Mr. Moosey?
It has not. And just, you know, just for a recap, it has not changed my priorities.
Okay. Thank you.
And I believe this is what Ms. Baumgartner was testifying to about or talking about earlier when she was speaking to us. So. Any objection to passage of 18094? Seeing none, 18094 passes. And there is still a couple hundred thousand dollars short in the total project, is my understanding. So 18104, Madam Clerk.
An ordinance approving an appropriation of $6,095,473 from the reserve for match for paving and calcium chloride to project number 35467, Fund 4430. For paving projects and dust control.
There's a pending amendment on the floor, so Senator Leonard.
Well, I guess. Clerk, would I do my motion now, or do I wait until then?
You're going to do the motion now. You're going to include the amendment with it. So you've moved to postpone the amendment and the ordinance indefinitely.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Leonard?
Yes, Mayor. I would move to postpone the amendment and the ordinance indefinitely and like to speak to that.
Go ahead, please.
Yes, Mayor. The reason I would like to do this is that I believe that the $3 million, as was a gentleman came up here speaking about needing more time to look at this whole situation, and the cities have also requested that some of these funds be allocated to them, and I would think that this allocation of these funds would be more effectively and efficiently done through our budget process this winter.
So, Madam Clerk, a motion to postpone indefinitely does what?
Mr. Mayor, it's as you're voting, it's like you're voting the ordinance down.
Okay, I just want to let her.
So if you vote yes, it would kill the ordinance and the amendment, yes.
Okay, let's do it. Senator Sykes and Senator Mayfield.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I appreciate Assemblymember Leonard's motion, and I'm going to speak in favor of it. I think that, first of all, there's already $2 million missing from this amount because we've already appropriated it in an emergency session. And so the number is no longer there. And if the Public Works Department needs to appropriate some money to go out to bid on projects that they want to get done, I think there's plenty of time for them to make that request. So I'm going to urge my fellow assembly members and Madam Assembly members to support the motion.
Okay, Mr. Moosey indicates that he doesn't have a problem with the motion to postpone it. Definitely, Senator Mayfield?
Yeah, I have a bit of a problem with it because the money is needed for neighborhood roads, and I think we need to make a decision a little earlier so that we can get, if you notice the list of roads that we just entertained this evening, those roads will be worked on this summer. So the funding needs to come before then in order to get those bids coming in the door so that neighborhoods can get some improvements on the road. So. I would offer a secondary amendment to postpone.
Madam Clerk, no secondary amendments.
Okay. Then I would urge members to vote that down at this time, and perhaps we can consider after that a suggestion that we take this up in February, so that we still allow time to get some money on the roads and we take care of any other questions or business that we have to take care of at that time, rather than postponing this until our budget time. There's an awful lot of things that happen during budget time, so this is, in my feeling, it's a rather easy thing that we can resolve before then.
Senator Sykes, you're next.
I also agree with Mr. Mayfield, but I think we can vote a yes on this amendment and still have plenty of time before February if this request wants to be made again.
Anybody else? Let's vote on the motion to postpone indefinitely. Any objection to the motion to postpone indefinitely? Obviously there is two. So Madam Clerk, go ahead and have people vote.
Assemblymember Leonard, can I get you to vote on the motion to postpone indefinitely? Mr. Mayor, it passed with Assemblymember Bovee and Mayfield opposed.
Okay, so Ordinance 18-104 is postponed indefinitely. Let's go to the vetoes. Is there a motion to override Mayor's veto of scheduling of a January 15th work session on wetland mitigation? Seeing none? Senator Sykes?
Can I get you another pair of glasses, Mr. Mayor? I move to override the mayoral veto on the work session for wetland mitigation scheduled for January 15th, and I'd like to speak to it.
Clerk wants to explain the vote on this first, please.
So the motion is to override the mayoral veto. So if you want to hold the meeting and move forward with the January 15th meeting, you would vote yes. If you agree with the mayor in reference to not having the meeting, you would vote no.
Okay. Go ahead, Senator Sykes.
Okay. I think we should proceed with the meeting as requested. I believe the original request was made on June 19th. And the main players that were involved were Donlan and state and federal agencies that were dealing with it. But the permit was issued to Donlan, so that's no longer on the table. But the state and federal rules that are still with us put the concepts of future actions, something that we need to understand very thoroughly. So the borough is already involved to some extent, and could be more involved, as it has been in many other places, in partnership with the Corps of Engineers. So just to keep in mind, the original creation of the management, wetland management that was envisioned, was to allow the encouragement of development and also to be able to restore in the sustainability of our fisheries to the greatness that it was 35 years ago. And the participation in the Wetlands Mitigation Bank was an important part of that agreement, ingredient, because what it does, it provides competition among wetland mitigation banks. And it's critical because if this bank goes away, which is what is on the horizon, then when the federal government chooses to require mitigation, which they can, we don't know what the future is going to be, then the competition is not there. The wetland mitigation credits are going to become much, they're going to skyrocket due to lack of competition. And so I think that we've heard from the bank already, but we haven't heard from the agencies, which is what we had requested back in June. And I think that we need to do that. I did read your veto message very carefully, Mr. Mayor, and you did seem to be irked that I brought it up during a joint meeting, but we also had legislation that wasn't actually of an emergency nature anyway. I would like to go ahead with this, but I can tell you that the Fish and Wildlife Commission has requested the writing of a resolution to do this very same thing, which will be considered on Thursday. And I don't see any reason to postpone it. But if you want to change the date, it's okay. But I don't think that the problem is going to go away. and I think that we do need to understand it. And so I would propose that we go ahead with the meeting and arrange it, and I'd encourage you to vote yes on the override. Thank you.
Anyone else? Madam Clerk, I'll let you take over voting. Is there an objection to the override? Assemblymember Bovee? She objects? Okay, so. Go ahead, ma'am.
So the motion before you is to override the mayor's veto. If you agree with the override, means you want to hold the meeting on January 15th. So you would vote yes. If you agree with the mayor not to hold the meeting, you would vote no.
Okay, everybody got that? So let's go ahead and vote.
Mr. Mayor, it takes 5 votes to override your veto, so the override fails, and let me get this down real quick. Okay.
Okay, the next veto item. Is there a motion to override the mayor's veto for scheduling of a January 22nd work session on air quality? Assemblymember Sumner.
I move to override the mayor's veto on 18-138. I'd speak to it. I understand that the Planning Commission is going to be working on this. I believe they postponed till February, but I think that we have a real opportunity to have a work session and get information from the new staff down at DEC and through them, the new commissioner. We've been in contact with them, and I would recommend that we do this because this is something that is going to be coming before the Assembly at some point.
Okay, Senator Sykes.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm going to speak in favor of Assemblymember Sumner's motion. There's still plenty of misinformation still out there. So I ran into someone the other day. They thought we're still trying to steal people's wood stoves. That's never been true. But the questions that still remain are out there are regarding the federal law and the state law. And while we've heard about what the state may do or not do, it is ultimately a federal law. And we need to understand our role in that, if any, and figure out how to do it. So even though the misinformation has been pretty prevalent in social media, there is progress. And a lot of people now realize we're not after their stoves. There's widespread agreement that getting into non-attainment and enforcement action, which is under the APA federal rules, is a bad idea. It's almost universal that people want to keep the APA out of it. Most Butte residents I've talked to, in fact, I haven't talked to a single person who objects to being asked not to burn outside for a couple of days or two. So the real understanding, the only outstanding issues really are how the state law and the federal function and what we do in it. And this is a problem that everybody agrees is not going away. And indeed, since this is an open public meeting, the Planning Commission can come and listen as well if they want to, and they may have more knowledge if they do so. So I think we should go ahead with the meeting. Since I didn't get your veto message until Thursday, I had actually gone to the Butte Community Council and passed out notices telling them about our January 22nd meeting, and I don't think we ought to disappoint them. So I'm going to vote for the motion to override. Thank you.
Senator Beck.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm going to agree with the mayor on this, that I'd like to have the feedback from the Planning Commission before the meeting, so I'm going to support the veto on this.
Okay, anybody else? And that was the thrust of this veto, was it is before the Planning Commission. We had to show them a little deference and honor them. They'll bring it back to us. They'll make recommendations or non-recommendations, and then you'll have your chance to have work sessions. What do you want to do? Senator Sumner?
Mr. Mayor, we wouldn't be taking any action at the work session, so I don't see that there's a reason not to seek further information.
We'll just go listen in on a couple of planning commissions on this subject then. All right, let's vote on this. Madam Clerk, would you take over?
If I can get you to go ahead and everybody vote. Assemblymember Bovee, can I get you to vote?
I'm watching.
Mr. Mayor, the override failed with Assemblymember Sumner, Assemblymember Sykes, Assemblymember Bovee, and Assemblymember Leonard in support. It takes 5 votes, so the veto stands.
Okay.
Suck up.
You got the vote. You got the vote correct on that one. I'm just kidding. Okay. New business. Madam Clerk, please read the introductions into the record.
Introduction for public hearing on January 15th, 2019. Ordinance 19-1, Ordinance 19-2, Ordinance 19-3 with accompanying resolution 19-1, Ordinance 19-4 with accompanying resolution 19-2, Ordinance 19-5 with accompanying resolution 19-3, Ordinance 19-6, and Ordinance 19-7.
Senator Beck.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move to introduce the legislation as read into the record by the clerk and set the public hearings for January 15th, 2019.
Any objection? Hearing no objection, legislation is introduced for as read in the date. Vacancy report, Senator Beck.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move to confirm the mayor's recommendations as follows. Board of Adjustments and Appeals, resignation of Marty Van Deest, Joint Assembly School Board Committee on School Issues, Tam Bovee. Library Board, Susan Posier. Talkeetna Sewer and Water Service Area Number 36, Andrew Haig. With terms beginning January 1st, 2019, Enhanced 911 Advisory Board, Casey Cook, Library Board, Carol Goltz, Local Emergency Planning Committee, Casey Cook, Ken Hudson, Michael, I know how to say this, Chumaleski. Maleski, thank you, that's close. Planning Board, Lamar Anderson, Port Commission, Randall Kowalki, Big Lake RSA Number 21, Bill Kramer, Kinnick RSA Number 17, Daniel Huntington.
Any objection to the vacancy report? Any discussion? No objection, hearing none, the vacancy report is approved. There's no other new business, no referrals, no reconsiderations. Let's do comments. Mr. Spropoulos.
Two things. First, you introduced an ordinance tonight. It'll be up for public hearing next time regarding waiver of landfill fees and the declaration of emergency. Assemblymember Leonard asked for a supplement to the IM. That'll be coming forward in the packet. I don't want to talk about it now. Just make you aware there'll be supplement to the IM in the packet. I understand I'll have to move a motion to actually add it to the IM, though. I just wanted to make sure everybody's aware that's coming forward so it doesn't just drop out of the sky on you. And the second is, everyone have a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Very good. Mr. Moosey?
Merry Christmas to all. Other than that, I have no comment.
Madam Clerk?
Third, Merry Christmas to everybody and a Happy New Year, and I'll see you January 3rd.
And when are you off to Costa Rica?
January 13th.
Okay. Senator Sumner, comments?
Happy holidays. That's it.
Senator Leonard?
Merry Christmas to Mayor.
Senator Sykes?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I said a lot of Merry Holidays the last time here, but I forgot to say Merry Orthodox Christmas. I missed that one. Yeah, so I know. But it'll be before our next meeting. So I did want to get that one through. I did want to thank Assembly for the discussion, and I don't mind that the mayor vetoes something occasionally. He doesn't do it very often, and we generally agree, but they're important subjects, and I can pretty much assure that they'll be coming back as requests, so I look forward to hearing more on those things, and have a great evening, and I do think we provided a real good gift. The racetrack ordinance, although it's not a major piece of legislation, it's been worked on forever, and I'm glad that it's passed. Thank you all.
Senator Bovee?
Yeah, I'd like to just take a moment to thank the racetrack folks as well. This was an important piece to get done, and I think it speaks volumes for the community working with the Assembly. So thank you, everyone.
Senator Mayfield?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I just want to wish everybody a very Merry Christmas. Take time to share with your families. Hope that you all stay safe, and hope to see you all early next year. Thank you.
Councilmember Beck.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Yeah, I do expect to see the issues come back before us, and just apologize to my fellow assembly member, Jim Sykes. I don't vote against you very often there, but I was in favor of the mayor's vetoes tonight because I think those issues circle back around to us soon enough. So, but Merry Christmas, everybody. Thank you.
Yes, they will. I mean, those two issues, air quality, DEC, they're for the Planning Commission now, so they're going to do some recommendations. So we're going to see them again, and I hope we do. The wetlands mitigation, I know the staff has given us one or two presentations on it. And so if you want, get with staff and come up with some ideas on legislation, if you want to bring an ordinance before the Assembly, or if you want to refer it to the Planning Commission and get something going that way, I think that'd be a good procedure to work on that issue. Thank you, Mr. Shields, for coming tonight. I think you have your opportunity now. You're going to have plenty of time, I guess, now to work on that now. So, Mr. Harris, thank you for attending, and appreciate it, and all the work you do down in Juneau for us. And we have big hopes. I know the new commissioner, DOT, I was very proud of how fast he worked on helping our staff, Mr. Dolan and Mr. Billifer, work on Vine Road and the connection there. So just Merry Christmas to everybody, and Happy New Year. And seems like 2018 went awful fast to me. I don't know about the rest of you, but they just seem kind of come around in the circle. So I appreciate everybody's work. Mr. Moosey, have a Merry Christmas. And you said you have a grandson that is, what did he do in school?
He was student of the month in his elementary for his grade.
Well, you tell him congratulations. I guess we have a letter out to him, and that's wonderful. So Merry Christmas, everybody. We're off record at 7:46 or 47.